Welcome back to the Young Ag Achievers podcast. I am Lee Benson, the Public Information Officer for the Oklahoma Department of Agriculture, Food, and Forestry. And joining me is Oklahoma Secretary of Agriculture, Blaine Arthur. Coming up on the podcast today, Secretary Arthur will be talking to Presley Pullen of Stratford. Presley's currently a student at Oklahoma State. And Secretary Arthur will also be chatting with Bridger Arrington of Mulhall Orlando 4-H. Secretary Arthur, what shall we expect today from your interview with Presley and Bridger?
Well, we're certainly excited to have these two students on with us today, and I think they're going to give us some insight into our youth development programs here in the state of Oklahoma, both the FFA program and the 4-H program, and what that leadership kind of looks like at the top level for other students maybe that want to pursue that path, and just excited to hear their personal stories and how 4-H and FFA have impacted them in school and in their additional education.
Okay, and we'll get to that interview here in a moment, but before we do that, I always like to try to ask you a question here at the start to help our listeners get to know you a little bit better. So how about this one? School's going to be out here in a couple of months or so, which means that a lot of college students will take part in summer internships. So I want to ask you, Secretary Arthur, did you have a summer internship in college that you remember fondly or maybe not so fondly?
Fondly is maybe an interesting choice of words, but definitely a distinct internship that I had in the summer. My older sister is a veterinarian and my mother was a veterinarian as well, but I grew up in Chickasha, as some folks know, and worked at the vet clinic in the summertime in Chickasha, and a lot of times when they were either short staff or needed some extra help, and so got to do all the exciting fun things that a summer intern college student does, like clean up cat throw up in the kennels and walk dogs and kind of jump in for any of the calls that either Dr. Bresshorn had or anyone else on the team there. So a lot of interesting experiences. And I think certainly for me, I was not pursuing veterinary medicine myself, but it gave me a lot of respect for veterinarians, especially mixed practice veterinarians, and all the unique client situations that can come up, all the hard work that it takes just to make a vet clinic run. And I think also made me decide that I probably personally did not want to pursue that path. But I think that's the great thing about internships. And as you know, Lee, we have lots of students that join us here at the department in our different divisions for internships. And I think a lot of them walk away and say, okay, hey, I'm really interested in forestry now because of that internship. Or I spent time with our market development division and I'm really passionate about ag in the classroom or agritourism. Or they may just spend time with a staff person that has an office job, and some of those students decide, I don't want to be in an office all day, and that's okay. So I think it's a wonderful thing for college students to pursue those internships, you know, certainly probably leaning in towards maybe what you want to do. But then I think some of the greatest opportunities are you decide, okay, maybe that's not for me. Maybe pharmaceutical sales and all the travel, I thought that sounded great, but I want to be at home every night. So I think it's just a good way to figure out what you like and don't like.
And from my internship story, since I was in journalism and obviously didn't have an ag background, my one internship in the summer is I interned with this morning radio show in Minneapolis, Minnesota, where I'm from. And that taught me that I certainly did not want to do morning radio because the hours. I had to get there.
So how early? Yeah. I was going to say, how early did you start?
I had to get there, I think at 4:30 in the morning or so. And The show was already going on. And there was nobody there, and most of the time I got locked out. They didn't let me in.
Of the building there?
Yeah. And I had to like wait for somebody to come, or a security guard that was going in on their shift to, I'd say, hey, believe it or not, I'm supposed to be inside there. So, yeah, I learned that the hard way, I suppose.
But you did have an interesting hour TV job, though, yeah. Right? Just not on the morning
Complete
side.
Opposite.
Right?
Yeah, I used to work about 2 o'clock in the afternoon until about 11 o'clock at night. And so now it's a little bit more quote-unquote normal with kind of more of an 8 or 9 to 5, which I certainly prefer that to an unusual schedule. So I appreciate that background on your college internships and your college experiences. Well, still to come in the show after the interview, everyone knows it's been a difficult past couple of weeks for Oklahoma as wildfires have blazed across the state. We'll spend some time talking about all that we know. Again, that's later in the show. But first, I'll send it over to Secretary Arthur for her chat with Presley Pullen and Bridger Arrington.
Well, we're excited for another podcast and have two talented young adults with us here this afternoon. We've got Presley Pullen and Bridger Arrington. Going to talk a little bit today about lots of things, but probably more specifically about the FFA programs and the 4-H programs. But to just get us started, Presley, why don't you just share a little bit about yourself, any background that you want to share, and kind of kick us off.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. But I'm a sophomore at Oklahoma State University, pursuing a dual degree in ag communications and animal science. And a little bit about me, I actually didn't come from an agriculture background. I kind of joke around and like to say my dad actually competed in archery competitions all throughout high school. He actually won the world championship his senior year.
Very cool.
And very different sport to be talented at, I guess. And then my mom did water skiing throughout her high school experience. So very different track. I had a neighbor that showed pigs and sheep growing up. And I kind of made a deal with my dad when I was in second grade. I was like, if I go down there every day after school and help him with his pigs, you know, can I get a pig of my own? And he's like, oh, yeah, sure. Not thinking I would uphold my end of the bargain, but I would wait at the door every single day after school. And I'd go down there and I'd help him walk pigs. And the next year I got my first Duroc Berra for $250.
Okay, there you go.
And was last at about every single show, but I appreciate the humble start for sure, because it made me appreciate the wins later on a whole lot more. But yeah, that's just kind of how I got started. Joined the FFA in the eighth grade naturally and had a really great agricultural instructor that kind of poured into me and led me to pursue my majors at OSU. And now I've just kind of taken advantage of every opportunity that has been placed before me. I get to work with your sister, Dr. Biggs, now at the College of Veterinary Medicine. And just hope that throughout all these little experiences, I'll be able to find a career in ag that I really enjoy.
Okay. So. Excellent. We're glad to have you with us here this afternoon. Bridger, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay, so I'm from Mulhall, Oklahoma. It's a little bitty town that's about 30 minutes west of Stillwater. And I've been in ag pretty well my whole life. I've kind of had a different perspective of ag. My dad used to be a government trapper, and he started in Nebraska, and then we moved to Oklahoma. So towards the end of working for Wildlife Services, he worked for Secretary Arthur. And I've been in this office before. It's pretty cool. So it's cool to get to come back and see it again. But that was, I saw some things about ag that a lot of people never get to see when it came to the trapping and the damage from invasive species like hogs and stuff. We run cattle. I showed sheep for about 7 years, and that's what got me into 4-H. I really enjoyed it. I stopped showing a couple years ago because I had found some other projects that I like more. And I enjoyed it, and I get to go back to the shows. I see the people that I knew, and I get to talk to them. And that was a lot of fun. I learned a lot about that. Nobody in my family had ever showed before, so we had to learn a lot. And like Presley said, my first sheep was a orphan bottle lamb, and I remember this really well. It was the second show I'd ever been to. It was the county fall fair, and it's always a little bitty show. There was like 20 sheep there. And I was 9, and the judge placed my sheep at the bottom of the class, which I'm sure was second, but he came to me, and he said, "Sir, you did very well, but get a better sheep."
Uh-oh.
And for one, I was 9, so that was sorry, but anyways, I did eventually, and it made it worth a lot more to have the better sheep and win stuff, actually, after coming from that. So I enjoyed it. I learned a lot of stuff from it, though.
No, absolutely. I think having some experiences starting off maybe at not the top rung makes you want to work harder and do better. And certainly, as you mentioned, appreciate the success later on. So let's talk a little bit about, and some of our listeners probably are very familiar with, the leadership opportunities in the FFA and the 4-H program. But Presley, why don't you tell us a little bit about being a state FFA officer, what that entails, why you decided to pursue that, how, you know, that experience has helped you now as you're continuing your education, and then Bridger will have you talk about, because they're set up a little bit differently between the two programs, but if you want to start there, and then we'll have Bridger talk about the 4-H side.
Yeah, of course. So there's several different leadership opportunities that's offered within FFA. And I guess the one that I kind of fell the most in love with is just the connections and the people that you get to meet. I was listening to last week's podcast and they talk a lot about AFR camp and the different opportunities like that. But I think just through every different thing that I was able to be involved in, I was able to meet different people with different backgrounds. And it really just kind of fueled me to want to serve the organization for another year after high school. And Oklahoma does it a little bit different, where you actually get to be a full-time college student while you're serving as a state officer. So you go to class Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then on Tuesdays and Thursdays, you reserve those days to get to go serve your duties and get to meet students all across the state. So I was very thankful and fortunate enough to be able to do that last year. And great opportunity. I served with seven other officers, and they will always be my best friends and teammates for a year, but family for a lifetime is what we like to say. But that was a great opportunity that I was very thankful for, and got to meet a lot of students with very similar backgrounds to me. You know, they didn't have a traditional ag background. And it's just kind of a full circle moment getting to see how my stories impacted these students that I never would have got to meet if it wasn't because of the role that I was in.
And served as Central Area Vice President, is that
yes.
right? Okay, very good.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, Bridger, tell us a little bit about, you know, the 4-H program's a little bit different with the district offices and state offices, but tell us about your experience there and what capacity you're serving in, and then what kind of pushed you to pursue that.
So I'm homeschooled, and because I'm homeschooled, I can't be an FFA member. I can only do 4-H, which is fine. FFA looks great. I wish I could do it, but I went ahead and went through 4-H. As you get older, a lot of people that start in 4-H when they're young move on to FFA. So by the time you get to my age where you're older, there's not nearly as many people. So for one, we're really close-knit. A lot of the same people do the same things, so we see each other a lot. And we're organized at the local, county, district, and state level. Right now, I'm serving as the state secretary on the State 4-H Leadership Council. And when I decided to run for a district office, that was my first major office. I used to be really shy, and I met a guy named Jacob Sestock. He had been the state 4-H president when he was in high school, and we got to talking and got to be friends, and he told me, he said, you should try this. So I did, and I loved being a district officer. That was a lot of fun. So I moved on to state, and I really enjoy it because I get to work with the adults and like 4-H alumni. Then I get to work with people my own age. I get to teach workshops to them, but especially I get to work with younger 4-H kids that maybe were like me, that were really shy, and then somebody saw and was like, hey, you need to try this. This is something you would enjoy. I got to go to Atlanta, Georgia for the National 4-H Congress. It happens right after Thanksgiving. I went last year, and that was awesome. There was 1,000 people from all over the United States. And Puerto Rico, I had never met someone from Puerto Rico, and we got to talk for quite a while. That was really cool. I really enjoyed meeting them, but getting to do the things like that, that was the first time I'd ever been on a plane.
Okay.
I'd never flown before. So that was an opportunity that I had never seen. I've never seen that before, and I probably won't ever get to see something like that again. And I will say, if you're older and you're thinking you're going to just go into FFA and stop 4-H, I would highly recommend that you don't. For one, like I said, it's a lot of fun. There's a lot of things that we have that FFA doesn't. I know they have things 4-H doesn't, and you can have both. And also, there's a lot of scholarship opportunities as you get older in 4-H that when you get there, there's not much competition for it. So if you're like in seventh grade and you're thinking, oh, I'm going to move to FFA, stay in both. It's really good. There's a lot of people that are in both, and it's worth it.
You know, I think that's an important point to hit on. And as I think you all both know, prior to serving in this capacity, I got to be the executive director at the 4-H Foundation here in Oklahoma. And I think there are a lot of students that think, okay, I've got to decide one path or the other. But we certainly had lots of students who were very active in both the organizations. Now, your time management gets a little tricky trying to do both. But to your point, there's a lot of opportunities in each of the programs that the other programs don't offer. And certainly kids who want to pursue both, there's a lot of opportunity to do that. So I'm a big champion for 4-H and FFA programs, and a lot of people just think about the livestock side of both of them, which is great, and my kids participate in that part of it, but I think the leadership development piece of the youth development programs is really the best thing about both of them. So I want to talk to you both about just leadership, why you think it's important for young people to work on leadership development skills. What do you, what are some leadership skills that you think that you have or that you see that other have? Just we want to lean into the leadership space just a little bit. So Presley, if you want to start us off and talk about what you think leadership means and why students should work on it.
Yeah, of course. So I talked a little bit already about how I kind of got started through showing pigs. But once I joined FFA in the eighth grade, I realized that there was a large section of the leadership that I really fell in love with. And, you know, I think I gained a lot of my confidence through walking into a room and presenting a speech and just being able to connect with people about agricultural topics. And I hadn't known much about it prior to my journey in agriculture. Within that, I learned a lot. My family actually has a peach orchard there in Stratford. We call it Pullin' Peaches. And we get to work a lot with the Department of Ag with that. But I had lots of speech topics that kind of correlated to my peach orchard. And I just got to learn a lot and get to learn from people who have lived it and understand it. But I think gaining that confidence through giving the speeches and just kind of meeting people at all these different events is really kind of what led me to want to serve the organization.
So I'm going
to
ask you a follow-up on the peach orchard side of things. We've had some kind of wacky weather here a little bit. So talk about how that impacts your family's operation and some of the challenging dynamics when we get these temperature changes, especially this time of year.
Yeah, of course. So we've experienced lots of drought and, you know, the wildfires and everything right now. And that's the thing with peaches. They're so unpredictable. And then hail damage and all the different things. And just that's part of agricultural life. You know, you never can count on your crop to succeed and every year is going to look different. But I think that kind of correlates. It's just part of life. You know, life's unpredictable. But as long as you show up every day and you do your part, God is going to find a way at the end of the day to make that happen for you. You just might have to be a little bit persistent.
No, definitely agree. So final question on the peach side. What is your favorite peach food item?
Oh, well, we have our peach festival every summer. It's the third Saturday in July.
Okay.
My grandma would probably want me to answer her peach cobbler.
I think that's a safe answer, right?
It is, but I'm going to say there's a special family there in Stratford that they set up a little stand at the peach festival and they do their signature peach ice cream and there's just no one that can beat it. And there's nothing quite like the Stratford Peach Festival with triple degree temperatures there in July. So probably the peach ice cream.
Okay. Very good. Well, you can put that on the cobbler though, right? So you can kind of combo
those
together.
Combination. There you go. Sure.
Well, Bridger, we're going to swing back to the leadership side of things, but tell us about through the 4-H program, those leadership opportunities. Why do you think it's important for young people to experience some of these leadership training events? Or why leadership is just important, period, for young adults?
So the first thing is I have learned from having to teach things myself that I end up learning more than the people that I'm supposed to be teaching. And so that's one really good reason why. If you want to know a lot about something, try to teach someone about it.
Okay.
You will end up knowing more about it than you ever thought possible. But I think in the same way, being able to teach that to someone else, you might be super good at something. If you can't teach it to someone else, it's not going to be worth as much in the end. Being able to share that with other people, like my public speaking. Like I said, I used to be really shy, and I wasn't a very good speaker. People have taught me stuff about that. And it's made me better. So they didn't just help me. Now I've went on and I've taught other people and I've taught workshops about it. So it helps. It ends up helping way more than just one person that you helped after a speech contest or one person that you helped at a show. They're going to go on and affect a lot more people. So I think that's why it's really important to just be able to learn and then lead others and teach them those skills.
Now that's excellent information. And I'm going to kind of continue on the leadership piece, but pivot a little more into the team side of it, because both of you all Certainly, you served on the FFA officer team at the state level, and Bridger, you're working with the team of officers through the 4-H side of things. But talk about that team dynamic. Bridger, we'll have you start. My guess is sometimes you might not all agree on the team or have different ideas about how you should move forward or tackle something. And that's something, you know, Lee and I work with a team here at the Department of Ag, and I wouldn't say that we always agree on everything either. So talk about working with the team and how you navigate through challenging situations or just some of the dynamics that come with people having different opinions and how you get where you want to go.
So on the 4-H Council, especially last year when I was a state officer, all the people were very different. Like hardly any of us had the same background. We came from different areas. We had different projects, different hobbies, different opinions on almost everything. But we were all working towards the same goal in the end. So that helped a lot because we knew where we were trying to go and we knew that eventually we would get there. The trick is just to still like each other when you get there.
That's important. Yes.
So you had to be aware of that. This year, a lot of the people are very similar.
Okay.
We have very similar backgrounds, very similar projects. So it's not as challenging. It's not very hard to get an idea out there. But that was something I learned is even if you don't agree on anything else, you can work through to the goal that you both have and do something that's meaningful.
No, I think that's great advice. I think probably a good point to all of us adults to remember what you just highlighted there. Presley, tell us a little bit. I know as a FFA officer team, you all spend a lot of hours together traveling across the state of Oklahoma. And then certainly at times like this time of year, as they're preparing for state convention or during alumni camp, my guess is there are times where you might get a little bit tired of each other, but talk about those team dynamics and how you all worked through those or any lessons learned that you can use now in work or school.
Yeah, we do definitely spend a lot of time together and a lot of time in the van and traveling and doing different things. But I think something that was sometimes hard, but we had to keep it at the forefront was, are we having fun? And are we doing it for the right reasons? And that's really all that matters, I think, no matter what you're doing. I'm just keeping the members' best interest at heart whenever we're doing these different conferences and just being intentional with every single conversation. But I definitely am very thankful for the seven teammates that I got to have. And just seeing us after we zip up our jackets, too, just seeing the relationships that continue to form all because of the blue corduroy is something that's very special to me.
No, absolutely. Absolutely agree. I don't fit into my jacket as well as I did once upon a time, but certainly agree with that. Tell us a little bit about, and you mentioned Jacob Sestock, but tell us about, did you have another student, anyone that kind of served as a mentor or someone that you looked up to? And Presley, we'll start with you, and that could have been another FFA member, that could have been a teacher in school, but talk about, I think all of us like to have someone to kind of look up to or who has helped us through school and career pieces. So tell us about kind of your mentor, and that might be multiple people.
Yes, for sure. It is kind of multiple different people for me, but I already talked a little bit about my neighbor that got me started in the ag industry from the beginning. And his name's Jacob Gallahar, and he's actually a student in the vet college there in Stillwater now.
Okay, great.
So I got to peek into my head, into the classroom the other day and see him and just seeing how diligent he is in wanting to go back and do rural medicine. It's just, I've been able to look up to him through several different aspects of my life. And I credit a lot of the things that I'm able to do now all because of the little deal that he made with me and my dad back in second grade. But another one is my agricultural instructor, and I come from a really small school. I graduated with 41 students. Okay. So we have a single teacher program, and kind of talking with a lot of my teammates last year, you know, they have two or three. And I'm like, wow, my ag teacher really does a lot for us. And he has a wife that's very supportive too, and she teaches the home ec classes.
Okay.
But their relationship and just kind of seeing the way that he's all in on his students and would drive me all over the state when I was campaigning for state FFA office. And just, I think one thing that I will always remember is just our time spent in the ag truck and how much he invested in not only me, but every one of his students.
No, that is fabulous. So Bridger, tell us about mentor-wise, who's, and that might be on the 4-H side, that might be just in your daily life. Tell us who kind of is helping guide you or that you look up to.
So like I said, Jacob Sestock was a big one. He helped me really get started as an officer, and he taught me a lot about public speaking, but my parents are definitely my biggest ones. My mom is my 4-H club leader, and my dad's my 4-H shooting sports coach, and they do an amazing job, and they make sure that I'm doing everything as good as I can, and they help out a lot. And then I just have a lot of friends that are through the 4-H program that always help me out. So they might be the same age as me. Some of them are younger, some are older, and I think without those friends, I don't know if I could do even a third of what I do. They help out a lot. They're very supportive, so I appreciate them too.
No, that's great. I want to follow up, Bridger. You mentioned that you're homeschooled, and we've got a lot of those students here in the state, and I think sometimes they think they maybe can't participate in different activities, but talk about a little bit how 4-H maybe has opened some doors to you, just because being in a not the traditional school setting like some of our other kids, how that has benefited you having some opportunities you might not have had otherwise.
Okay, so I was homeschooled, and I am from a little bitty town, and I mean, I had some friends there, but I didn't have sports or anything like that to really get me away from Mole Hall as much. Through 4-H, now I've got friends all over Oklahoma, so it really helped me get out there and meet people from other places and see those different things. Like I said, I would never go to a different school to do something. I'm just there in Mole Hall. So that really helped get me out there, and it really helped prepare me for other situations. Like I go to VOTEC.
Okay.
And it really helped me whenever I got there. That was the first school that I'd ever been to. I mean, I did all my work at home, but that was a little different. And I got there and it wasn't any big deal. I could go through that and I was comfortable in it. So I think it really helped me just wherever I go, I can meet new people, can make friends, and just be comfortable in the situation I'm in.
You know, I think that's something that is so important about our youth development programs. I'm probably much more naturally an introverted person. But by all of the leadership camps that you go to, or if it's state roundup or state convention, you just kind of get into a comfortable habit of meeting new people, learning about them, they're learning about you. And I think that helps a lot. That's, I think, the wonderful thing. And sometimes it might be your 4-H leader or your ag teacher pushing you a little bit to participate in some of those things. But that's a skill I know that's been very beneficial to me later on in life, whereas sometimes you might just want to hang back and be the wallflower. You're like, I've done this before. I've met people through all these other programs. So I think that those pieces help a lot. Both of you all certainly have been very successful and had lots of things go well, I know, just by your resumes and your accomplishments. But think about a time, and Presley, we'll have you start us with something that didn't go exactly like you wanted, or a disappointing situation, and or a funny story, whatever that might be. Kind of think of one of those instances and tell us a little bit about that.
So within agriculture, nothing's ever really going to go according to plan, it seems like.
Very true statement, yes.
but I believe it was my junior year of high school, and it was they had just started the Certified Oklahoma Bread Association show, and it was still there in Shawnee, and it's a great show, and it's blossomed into a full-on production. But we went to that livestock show and did pretty well, but after it, our pigs contracted porcine epidemic diarrhea virus, or PED virus. And the way that our barn's situated, we have several pens inside, but we also have some outside pens. And all the inside pigs were okay, of course, but the outside ones were not. And then a full-on blizzard hit, and each pig had their own bucket that was a water bucket.
Okay.
And we had layers on, me and my sister, and we were doing all the things to prevent the inside pigs from getting it. We'd sent feces samples to the State Department to have them tested to see because our county was a few weeks earlier than everyone else's. But we ended up not being able to show at our county show. And, you know, we depend on that a lot for funds for the next year. But it ended up being a very rewarding experience. And we got to go over there. And if we had a friend that had a few in a class, we, you know, we could grab the whip and go in there and show one for them and get on the spray bottle. And it was just a very rewarding experience. And then our friends, not needing to at all, but they like put together a little fund for us. For the pigs the next year. So it was
very sweet.
And just having people in your corner like that, who through the ups and the downs, they'll always be there for you.
Now, learned a lot about biosecurity would be my guess, right? Through that process. And then just, you probably knew that, but then just a reminder of how supportive ag folks are of their community and students and their activities.
Yes, for sure.
All right, Bridger, what, share with us a story of when things didn't go quite like you wanted them to, or something happened and what you learned and took away from that experience.
Okay, so when you said funny, this one, I thought of this, but when I was gonna give my campaign speech for state 4-H secretary, we do it at our state 4-H roundup, which is our state convention. It's in July and we have it on the OSU campus, and we use the Galgariba Arena and we have a stage set up. And I'd been a state officer, so I'd already been up on stage a bunch and should have known what was going on. But I had practiced my speech. I thought I was going to be giving it in the morning, and I wasn't. I was giving it in the afternoon. So I go up on stage. I had practiced this a bunch, and I said, "Good morning." And somebody was nice enough to laugh at me from, like, the front row. If they hadn't done that, I wouldn't have ever figured out that I had messed up. So I was kind of glad they did, because I was like, I understand this afternoon. I had ate lunch 10 minutes before this. Like, I knew it was afternoon. But my speech was not that good. After the whole morning-afternoon confusion, it just didn't work out. And I gave another speech the next day, and it wasn't as good as I would have wanted either. So I was like, this isn't going the way that I want it to. We're going to have to get busy with the campaigning. And two of my best friends were standing there, and one of them was joking around, and he said, "You should make a sign and stick it on us." I was like, "Watch me." So the dance, we have two dances. The first one was that night. So I made a sign, and my campaign slogan had been "Be smart, vote for B." So I made this little sign, and I clipped it to his shirt, and it said, "Dance with me, vote for B." That was the smartest thing I did that whole week. That was hilarious. Watching him wear the sign, he ran around all week with that clip to his back, and everyone saw it. Everyone knew what that was. It was great. And I met a lot more people from that, because I had to actually go out and work a lot harder at the campaigning than I would have if my speech had went really good. So I got to meet a lot of people, and I had a lot of fun with that. And me and my friends that had the signs on, we enjoyed it, and I learned a lot. I learned I need to remember what time it is when I give a speech. That's always a good one. And maybe practice a little bit more, but that was a good one, and it ended up working out really well.
And we're successful then,
I guess. Yeah, it worked out really well. Okay. We're going to print the signs this year, because they didn't clip on very good. So we have plans. This worked out good enough. We're going to do it again.
So prior preparation, You're working on that piece. Well, we'll change gears just a little bit, but wanted to ask you guys maybe a different question than the path that we've been on. Both of you have grown up here in Oklahoma, have lived on two different parts of the state. But why don't you tell us, Bridger, you start. Tell us your favorite thing about the state of Oklahoma.
Probably how different it is in different places. I live right in the center, and we have grass, we have wheat fields, we have trees. It's just right. We have everything. You go east, and it is straight forest. I've been out there, and that is too many trees. I like to be able to see where I am. But then you go the other direction, you go west, and there's no trees. And I'm not too big on that. I kind of like a few of them. The whole flat thing, that doesn't work out too good for me either. But it's so cool that you can drive an hour either way and see the tall grass prairie. Or you can go to the south and see pine forest. There's mountains. There's all this different stuff that I don't know of any other state that has that much different land. And then just the amount of ag that can support, there's all kinds of different things. Like, there's forestry. I don't have any of that where I live. we have wheat fields. There's other places that are straight grass. So you can see all that different stuff and just different ways of doing things that I would never see or do where I live.
Okay. All right. Presley, what about you? Favorite thing about Oklahoma?
Well, I agree with Bridger. I think we are a very diverse state, but I think I'm probably going to have to say the quality of people. And I think it's something that I took for granted a lot before I went up to school at OSU, but just getting to interact a lot with the out-of-state students, and they're like, you guys walk into a classroom and everyone's like, hey, how are you? And we just don't have that back home. So I definitely did take it for granted a lot, but I think we have some very top-notch people that would take the shirt off their back for anyone.
No, I definitely agree with you. I've had a chance to travel a lot here in the United States and even some internationally, and I don't think you'll find any better people than you will in the state of Oklahoma. So certainly agree with that. All right, I'm going to get down to our last question here. Bridger, I'll have you go first. If you are going to give advice to another 4-H member, what's your best advice that you would give them?
So, for one, start sooner. I should have started speeches and contests and all this stuff like as soon as I possibly could. So that stuff, I waited, and I really regret that now. So start sooner, and then if there's something that you think you want to do and you're not sure, go do it. I was not sure I wanted to run for office, and I did, and I absolutely would not trade it for anything. So even if you're not sure, you think, oh, I might not be that good at it or whatever, go do it. It is well worth it, and if you're not good at it, you'll know you're not now before you just thought you were. So that's what I would say.
All right, Presley, what's your advice for other FFA students or kids that are getting ready to head into the FFA program?
Yeah, I agree with Bridger too. And one thing that I would say is don't be afraid to blaze your own trail. And I didn't come from an ag background at all, but said yes to a lot of opportunities and said yes to a lot of people that probably would have ended badly if I told them no. But yeah, don't be afraid to blaze your own trail, and your story is your story and it's different from everyone else's. So take advantage of that and take advantage of the people that are willing to invest in you.
Well, I think exceptional advice from two young adults here representing our youth development programs. And I truly believe we have the best 4-H and FFA program here in Oklahoma in the United States. Our kids compete at the national level and do exceptionally well. So have had a wonderful visit here this afternoon. So glad to have Bridger Arrington and Presley Pullen with us, and their advice of starting sooner and blazing your own trail. I think that resonates with everybody, no matter how old you are. So thank you all very much for joining us here this afternoon on our podcast.
Bridger and Presley have departed. Lee Benson back here alongside Secretary Blaine Arthur. And I'll ask you, Secretary Arthur, what are your biggest takeaways from the interview?
You know, two outstanding young adults that joined us today. And Lee, I was really most impressed with their advice at the end of the interview when we kind of asked them what advice they would give to folks. I don't think that probably when I was that age, certainly Bridger being in high school, would have had enough self-awareness or maybe worldliness to have given advice. And Presley, just a sophomore in college, but I thought a very mature life experience to share with folks. So certainly very impressed with that.
No, I agree. From Bridger, again, being a teenager, saying that, oh, you should start sooner. I think he said he wanted to start sooner. I think that was in terms of 4-H.
Yes, or yeah. Just,
and so that, and then what other thing you said that stood out was, if you want to do something, just go do it. And that's advice that I will say as somebody who is, you know, in my mid-30s, that I hear that and I think, yeah, he's right. There's things that happen all the time, even now, where I, for whatever reason, not that I'm like afraid or I don't know, more of just like, what's the point? And think, you know what, just do it. If you're even thinking about it, go for it. And I like the part where you said, you know, if you do it and you find out you're not good at it, well, then at least you know.
I know. I loved that. I thought, but what good advice for us as adults, because we should know better. And sometimes I don't think we seize those opportunities.
And that's exactly what it was. And then, you know, I think Presley said, just don't be afraid to blaze your own trail, because she didn't have an ag background, and she was able to go from not having that to be in a situation now where she's been very successful, and there's a lot more, I'm sure, ahead of her. And I also like that you asked them what their favorite parts of Oklahoma was.
Yes.
And I, you know, for Presley, just to, I mean, make everyone that listens to this podcast that's from Oklahoma happy by saying it's all about the people, which I think is definitely true.
No, I agree. And you've heard me speak at some places, Lee, and a lot of times I'll jokingly say that we don't live in Oklahoma because of the weather. We live here because of the people. And I think that is a huge piece of why Oklahomans love being Oklahoman so much, is because of the character of the majority of the people that are here in the state.
And you mentioned how you've traveled a lot domestically and internationally, and you said, yeah, Oklahoma has the best people. And from my perspective, I haven't traveled nearly as much as you, but I mean, I've lived in, you know, 6 different states, and I mean, there's good people everywhere. And I think every state, they'll probably tell you, oh, our people here are great.
For sure. For sure.
But I really do think, I guess I'm biased now, I live here. Oklahoma does have the best people. I don't know. I'm from Minnesota, and Minnesotans are very nice, but I feel you have to move in and you got to get to know them.
Okay.
Once you get to know them, you know, maybe Boris here, I don't know, again, maybe I'm just biased now because I live here, but Oklahomans like, hey, yeah, welcome, come on in, we'll talk to you, and it just seems a lot more friendly. But I'm sure if my friends listen to this podcast, they'll probably get mad at me for saying that, from Minnesota.
From Minnesota too. That's good.
Yeah,
that's good.
No, Minnesota nice is a thing.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
Minnesota nice. Okay.
I learned that after moving there before high school, and yeah, certainly it's a situation where people there are very sweet. Let's see, I'm trying to think of other things. I'm going through I take notes. Oh, the question about Presley, her favorite peach, was riveting, because she went one way and then, you know, wanted to make her grandma happy, but then went back to the peach ice cream, which I didn't see that coming.
And I will tell you, I have had the peach ice cream. I don't know Presley's grandmother, but I would probably vote for Presley's grandmother's peach cobbler, just because I think that's the right thing to do. But if anyone listening has not had the peach ice cream, highly encourage you. It is definitely worth the drive just for the ice cream alone.
And Bridger talking about how, first of all, we were talking about this a little bit before we heated up the mics. You know, he mentioned that he's a homeschool kid, and that's why he's in 4-H and he's not able to do FFA. And I didn't know that. And just how many things that he has done as a homeschool kid. Because growing up, I didn't know really any homeschool kids. Okay. As I've gone into adulthood, I've actually met more people that were homeschooled. And maybe that's just coming to this part of the country, in Oklahoma. And I lived in Texas for a bit. And you know, I find out that, well, people that were homeschooled are just like everybody else. They're pretty normal. And in a lot of ways, with Bridger, he probably is a lot more advanced and experienced than somebody even like me, because he was able to get, or has been able to get, all around the state and meet all these people through 4-H, which he brought up. And so I'm sure his connections are wide, not maybe just in Oklahoma, but maybe in other states too. And that's something that I certainly didn't have growing up. So I thought that was interesting to hear about his story and his background and what he's learned, you know, as a homeschool kid.
You know, I think two great examples of, there is not a set background or a way of being educated or a way of being raised if you want to be in the 4-H or FFA programs. You know, Presley didn't have ag background, but then found her way there. And Bridger, not in a traditional school setting, a public school setting, at least here in Oklahoma, but has found all of these opportunities and been very, very successful in 4-H. And I think that's a great thing about both of the programs, is there's opportunity for every student. It doesn't matter your background, doesn't matter your family situation, any of those things. There is a place for kids to be incredibly successful in the 4-H and FFA program and find something that they're passionate about. There's so many different program areas that you can participate in, project areas on the 4-H side, but SAE areas on FFA. So it's truly opportunity for everyone, which is a great thing about both the programs.
And you mentioned how it doesn't matter what your background is, you know, whether you can get into 4-H or FFA. And I know Bridger talked a little bit about his experiences about how, yeah, he's in a group of people that, yeah, maybe we don't all agree on everything and we're all a little different, but we all have one goal and we can all work towards that, which is another piece of advice I think, and you brought it up too when you were talking to him, that that goes, you know, throughout life, is no matter what, if you're all together and it's a team situation and you all have one goal, even if you don't agree on everything, it's possible to work towards it. And it sounds like not just obviously in 4-H, but in FFA. Those are two organizations where they stress that leadership, working together to accomplish that goal, whatever it may be.
Yeah, I think that, and I don't know that he said specifically compromise, but I think that's what he was working towards. And I think certainly right now, all of us, and maybe even some policymakers, compromise for our friends that are at different levels of working on policy. Compromise is so important. And I think seeing these students navigate through that and having to work through some of those challenging situations benefits them long term, but certainly benefits our communities and wherever they decide to land in their personal and professional careers.
Well, certainly an interesting conversation. We thank Bridger and Presley for coming in, and looking forward to the next episode, and you know, we'll figure out who we're going to talk to next, but certainly another good interview, Secretary Arthur, you and Bridger and Presley. Before we wrap up this episode, though, I did want to see if you know, you wanted to discuss and talk about the last couple of weeks here in Oklahoma. I know it's been really hard on a lot of Oklahomans. Wildfires have not just been out in the northwest part of the state, but really everywhere in the state. And our Oklahoma Forestry Services, we've learned a lot from them, and they've been working around the clock to do what they can to contain those fires. Fortunately, as we record here Tuesday evening, it seems like things are getting better. The fires are being more and more contained. And I know that you were able to get out last week to survey and talk to some people. So I want to throw it over to you to see, you know, if you have any thoughts on what's going on or what's been going on the last couple of weeks.
You know, an incredibly challenging fire season for end of February, first part of March for us here in Oklahoma. And a lot of people have seen that through media, through social media. Texas having the largest fire ever in history, and that fire moved its way into northwestern Oklahoma. The piece that I want to really highlight, though, is, and you mentioned our Oklahoma Forestry Services team, and those guys and gals have been pre-positioned. They have been spending long, long days. A lot of them live on the eastern side of the state or the southeastern side of the state, and a lot of them have been in northwestern Oklahoma, but very appreciative of Mark Goller, who is our state forester, and Drew Daly and Andy James, and I could go on down the list of all of our exceptional staff, but it is very much a collaborative effort to respond to those wildland fires. We've got volunteer fire departments throughout the state, rural fire departments, and everyone working in tandem as much as you possibly can in that type of situation to work towards protecting human life and property. But the reality is, a lot of our farmers and ranchers, some of them unfortunately have lost their personal residences, but we have a lot of fence that was lost, certainly livestock that was lost as well. And Lee, you and I are going to go back out again tomorrow to visit with some of those folks. So challenging, challenging situation for Oklahomans, and especially those directly impacted. But as always, we've had a wonderful response as far as donation, hay that's moving its way there to northwestern Oklahoma, and Cattlemen's Association's Foundation has been a big part of that, coordinating resources, extension offices out there. So everyone plays a big part in responding in in the middle of the fire, but then also sometimes the work I think we forget to talk about is the work that happens after the fact of helping those folks access the resources that they need and to rebuild. The challenging thing I think for us on the ag side is you see those fires move across what might just look like pasture land to people, and they think, okay, well, there aren't a bunch of homes being lost, right, as comparison to fires that we see maybe in other parts of the United States. But for those farmers and ranchers, those livestock, those cattle that are lost, that pasture that's lost, that's how they make a living. That's how they depend on that for their income. And certainly the livestock piece of it is very personal because their job day in and day out is to take care of those animals. So a really, really tough situation. But lots of good folks working together to try to help out there. And we know that will continue. And so we're hopeful for better weather conditions and some more moisture as we move through this fire season here in Oklahoma.
And I brought up the fire situation report, which I've been checking every single day. I know you've been the same and getting updates from Mark Goller, state forester. And I recall just a handful of days ago reading this report and talking to Mark. And, you know, there was 30 plus fires still burning in Oklahoma. And now you look at the fire situation report and now it's five, I believe, five or six. So, I mean, it's just nice to see that at least there's been some progress, that the weather has cooperated. I know this past weekend it was fired potential danger, and fortunately, yes, it seemed like the state foresters were able to get out there and contain. And so it's just nice to see that statistics have improved. And I did want to use this time to kind of transition. We always like to say a random ag fact.
Yes.
And we'll talk about the wildfires. And so far this year, and again, we're 2 months into the year,
right,
not even
right,
you know, 2+ months into the year. And we have already eclipsed our 5-year annual average in acres burned in the state of Oklahoma. Through 2 months, we've already eclipsed the 5-year annual average, if that makes sense. So on average, it's normally about 143,000 acres burned in the entire year here in the state of Oklahoma. And now we're up around, I think, 170,000 already. Right. So it just gives you an idea of just how much these wildfires have impacted the state.
Not a statistic that we're happy to see, but that's also why we're appreciative of Mark and his team and state, local, federal resources being responsive. And as we do a lot on the ag side of things, we do a lot of praying, because that's about your best option. And so I think we're all praying for better weather conditions and certainly some more moisture for the rest of the year.
Indeed. Well, thank you all for joining us on this edition of Young Ag Achievers. We invite you to join us for future episodes when we once again talk to more of Oklahoma agriculture's young ag achievers. For Secretary Arthur, I am Lee Benson. Thank you for listening.